Hello, adventurers. Welcome back to the next installment of the audio version of my memoir, Adventures with Postpartum Depression. If you are just joining us, you might want to hit stop and go back a few episodes. I've done prologue through chapter 7, so today we're jumping into chapters 8. But, you know, if you like jumping into things in the middle, then stay with us. We're going to be talking about insomnia. Chapter 8, Insomnia. Pippa started crying when the nurse placed the thermometer under her armpit and kept screaming even after she was measured and weighed and the nurse had retreated to the hallway. I bounced Pippa up and down and sang a lullaby. That did not help. So I sat down on a chair and tried to breastfeed her. That did not help either. Why woo me? My dad was trying to tell me something, but I could not understand what he was saying. What? What? Why don't you let me take Pippa outside and walk her around? No, no, she has to stay with me. I thought I was shouting so that he could hear me over the sound of the Pippa siren. But in hindsight, I think I was also screaming to burn off some pent-up anxiety. I was in an examination room at the pediatrician's office with my dad, mom, and Pippa, waiting for Pippa's 3-month wellness visit. In the waiting room, there had been a mom alone with her baby. I could not fathom how she managed the acrobatics of a pediatrician visit without the support of another adult, or in my case, an entourage who had even chauffeured me to the medical building. There was more than enough space in the examination room for 3 adults and a baby, but as Pippa screamed, it seemed too small, as if the walls were inching towards us, just like in the trash compactor scene on the Death Star in the original Star Wars movie. The pediatrician arrived. How is everything? Great, I said. Pippa kept screaming. Do you have any questions? Yes, I said, but then heat rushed to my face. I'd written a list of questions for the pediatrician, but the list was in the diaper backpack. Finding the list meant passing Pippa to someone else and then fumbling through diapers and extra outfits while everyone watched. That was more humiliation than I could handle. I would have to recall the questions from memory, but with Pippa screaming, it was impossible to think. She gets like this, I said. She screams in the late morning and I don't know how to soothe her. Have you tried white noise? Yes. We ran through the list of usual ways to soothe a crying infant. Then the doctor asked, are you drinking any caffeine? A few sodas every morning. You might want to quit caffeine. It can be transmitted through breast milk, and that might be agitating Pippa. The pediatrician said might. I remember that clearly. But the guilt saw an opening and pounced. I had started drinking soda and coffee shortly after delivery. Can you blame me? The caffeine must have been transmitted through the breast milk. It must have been harming Pippa, and therefore I must be responsible for every minute of suffering my poor baby had endured in her 3 months of life. I was a horrible mother. By the time Pippa was 3 months old, I was convinced that something was not quite right. All I had was a premonition that life was a little too difficult. There was no way I was going to tell that to the pediatrician, my parents, Nathan, or anyone else. If I did that, they would think I was lazy and weak. As the pediatrician talked about Pippa's development, I resolved to quit caffeine as soon as possible. Thereafter, caffeine became the scapegoat for all my problems. Surely motherhood would be easy as soon as I got it out of my system. That night, I went to bed shortly after transferring Pippa from my breast to her cradle. It was only 9 o'clock, but the wellness visit had drained me. Lying in bed, I kept replaying the visit in my mind, but after a half hour or so, I fell asleep. 3 hours later, my body jolted awake. I got out of bed and checked everything that might be a security breach. But once I got back into bed, I was still wide awake. I lay in bed, eyes closed, and willed myself to sleep. I prayed. I counted forward and backward. I took deep breaths. When Pippa woke at 6 and cried for breakfast, I was still awake. The darkness was about to get darker. I only had 10 ounces of soda today. Tomorrow, I'll just drink 9. Way to go, babe. How do you feel? I paused to consider. Not too bad right now. I was exhausted all day, but that was because I didn't sleep last night. It had nothing to do with caffeine withdrawal. I'm sure you'll sleep tonight, Nathan said, making silly faces for Pippa. I went to bed even earlier than the night before, put on my headphones, and listened to a rainstorm on a white noise app. I inhaled and exhaled, inhaled and exhaled, relaxed, drifted towards sleep. And then my bladder stirred. I had peed less than 5 minutes ago. Still, I got out of bed and went to the bathroom. Back in bed, I focused on breathing again, but my heart started to pound as if I were in grave danger. It did not matter how I tried to relax. My body refused to sleep. Nathan tiptoed into our bedroom, careful not to wake me, unaware of the cacophony in my head. I stayed still as a corpse, because if Nathan knew I was awake, he might say something, and then we might talk, and then I might never sleep again. If only I stayed still and quiet, maybe my body would surrender to the sleep I desperately needed. Nathan started to snore. I got out of bed to pee and check the time. 11 o'clock. If I fell asleep now, I could sleep for 7 hours. 7 hours was more than enough. I lay down on my back and started to fall asleep, but then felt compelled to shift to my left side. I tried to relax into slumber, but then I felt a crick in my neck and switched to my right side. Now I was wide awake, so I focused on deep, calming breaths. "You okay, babe?" Nathan mumbled, still half asleep. "Yes," I whispered, not wanting to wake him. He reached over and patted my leg. I froze and held my breath. He had to go to work in the morning. He needed his sleep. I had to limit the tossing and turning. Midnight came. If I fell asleep now, I could sleep for 6 hours. Six was fine. Six was enough. Pippa had started sleeping 10 hours through the night. I had 10 glorious hours in which I could sleep uninterrupted. Between breastfeeding and normal pregnancy discomfort, I had not had this opportunity for almost a year. Yet I could not sleep. My body had betrayed me. Thinking about the wasted opportunity only exasperated my frustration. If only I could just stop thinking, I would sleep. I peed one more time, a pathetic drop. Then, once I was back in bed, my thoughts drifted to the doors. I crept out of the bedroom and started the process of unlocking and relocking. At 1 in the morning, I was still tossing from side to side, my thoughts racing. Maybe I was hungry. Breastfeeding burned thousands of calories. If I ate something, I'd be able to sleep. I crept to the kitchen and ate several spoonfuls of peanut butter straight from the jar. Each time I stabbed my spoon into the jar, my muscles relaxed a little more. I stopped eating when my stomach felt uncomfortably full. Then I washed the spoon clean because I did not want Nathan to know. He had always loved my body at any weight and never said anything that made me feel self-conscious or ugly, but the postpartum depression had convinced me otherwise. Besides, I sensed that the frantic eating of peanut butter in the middle of the night was a problem of some sort, a problem that I needed to solve all by myself. When I finished washing the spoon, I was not ready to go back to bed. First, I had to check the pilot lights in case I had somehow caused a draft that blew one of them out. I hovered my hand over each of the burners, then knelt down to visually confirm that each of the gas burners was flickering and we were not being poisoned in our sleep. Then I had to go check the doors, closets, and windows again, because you never know. Back in bed again, I prayed for sleep. It was 2 a.m. Pippa would be awake in 4 hours, maybe sooner. Please, God, please, let me sleep. Finally, a little before 3 in the morning, I fell asleep. 3 hours later, Pippa woke up ravenous and ready to breastfeed. While she nursed, I consulted Dr. Google. I typed, "Baby is 3 months old and I can't sleep." The phrases postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety showed up in the first page of hits. What? I did not have the baby blues. I loved my baby. Those results could not be right. I fine-tuned my search, typing, "Can caffeine withdrawal cause insomnia?" Dr. Google unearthed a blog post about caffeine withdrawal. It didn't say anything about insomnia, but buried in the comments section, a few people complained about having insomnia after quitting caffeine. The internet had obliged and confirmed my hypothesis. The insomnia was a withdrawal symptom. I shoved away any thoughts of postpartum depression. I just had to get the caffeine out of my system and everything would be okay. "How are you doing? Have you been sleeping better?" My mom sounded concerned. I called to say hello after Pippa fell asleep in my arms. "Yes. Well, no. But I had my last sip of caffeine yesterday. I'm sure if I wait a few more days and let all the residual caffeine get out of my body, I'll start sleeping better than ever." "You could call your doctor." I stroked Pippa's cheek with my free hand. "My doctor can't do anything for me. It's caffeine withdrawal. I just have to be strong for a few more days." I was trying to convince my mom that the insomnia was on the verge of resolving itself. But really, I was trying to convince myself. Maybe if you eased up on the breastfeeding. Breastfeeding was still a time-consuming affair. I had attended a local breastfeeding support group, and the lactation consultant assured the exhausted mothers that we were making an investment. After 6 weeks of hard work, our babies would not need to nurse nearly as often as they did during the early weeks. But I had passed the 6-week mark, and then the 12-week mark, without any improvements. At just over 3 months old, Pippa was still feeding like a newborn. Since I was the woman with all the milk, that meant I was always on call. When I was pregnant, I assumed that pumping would make it easy for me to leave the house to get breaks. My parents could watch Pippa while I got a pedicure, or just wander Target with a big iced coffee from Starbucks. The breastfeeding experts, however, warned that if I went too long without pumping, my milk supply would be compromised. That meant if I went to see a movie, I would have to find a way to pump. But just the thought of pumping in a theater bathroom or my parked car made my adrenaline go crazy. My mom could see that breastfeeding was not only making my life difficult, but it was also making it difficult for other people to help me relax. I switched my phone from one shoulder to the other. Mom, stop it. I'm breastfeeding Pippa for an entire year and then as long as she wants. End of discussion. Later that week, when my parents visited, I slunk off to the guest bedroom to nap. I tried listening to a meditation for relaxation, but it involved gongs that were like nails on a chalkboard. I switched to a rainstorm, and then a half dozen other sounds on my white noise app. Nothing helped. By the time Pippa was ready to eat again, I felt groggier than ever. Do you think it's still caffeine withdrawal? My mom asked. Maybe. You could call your doctor. If I don't sleep tonight, I'll call her tomorrow. I did not sleep that night, but still, I hesitated. I did not want to call my doctor. I had gotten the ultrasound of my liver, prompted by the results of the blood test I got for my wrists, and the ultrasound had revealed a healthy liver. But the doctor still wanted me to get my blood drawn one more time just to be safe. I had not yet been to the lab for the second blood test. These days, even the thought of doing laundry made me physically ill with anxiety. What if Pippa cried and needed to breastfeed right when the wash finished? And then I forgot to transfer the wash to the dryer, and mildew started to grow in the washing machine. Or even worse, what if I got the clothes transferred to the dryer, but a fire started? What if the smoke detector was faulty? Compared to laundry, a blood test was a logistical ordeal. I could not take Pippa to the lab. Too many germs! But that meant pumping a bottle so my parents or Nathan could watch Pippa. And pumping? Pumping was a nightmare. I had assumed that within a few weeks of Pippa's birth, I would have a freezer stocked with a six-month supply of liquid gold. The reality was much different. The breastfeeding experts advised pumping after a nursing session. That way, you did not risk depleting baby's next meal. After a nursing session, though, my breasts had barely any drops of milk left. Never mind the fact that Pippa usually wanted to snuggle or nap in my arms after nursing. And try as I might, I could never figure out a way to hold her safely while keeping the pumping mechanism in place. On top of all this, pumping itself was not exactly a pleasant experience. It felt a bit like being molested by a robot. To recap, I was nearly 4 months postpartum, had quit caffeine and given it enough time to clear my system, was still suffering from insomnia, and had an inkling that now was the time to call my obstetrician, but the last time I had any contact with her office, the nurse told me to get my blood drawn. If Sorvis had required a blood test, liver ultrasound, and yet another blood test, I could not imagine what hoops my doctor would make me jump through if I told her about the insomnia. She would probably just tell me to get the outstanding blood test already, the prospect of which fried my frazzled mind even more. Then, for the first time since I've been pregnant, I got my period. Hallelujah! The insomnia was not a caffeine withdrawal symptom. It was just a case of a year's worth of PMS. Thank goodness I had not called my doctor over something as trivial as that. That night, I slept 6 glorious hours in a row. I had been doing that every 3 or 4 days since the insomnia started. Yet another reason I refused to call my doctor. If I scheduled an appointment and then slept 6 hours the night before, everyone would think I was being a hypochondriac. When I reported my sleep progress to Nathan, he said, "That's great!" He smiled in a way that said, "I've been worried about you, and I'm so happy that you feel better." But I could not see that. Instead, I misinterpreted the smile as saying, "Thank God, you have been such a drag with all this insomnia bullshit." "I bet I sleep 6 more hours tonight," I said. That night, I was awake until 3 in the morning. What was wrong with me? It was not caffeine withdrawal. It was not PMS. I could think of no other explanation for the insomnia and anxiety that haunted my days. My body was broken. Something about pregnancy had destroyed my ability to sleep, and I would never sleep well again. I would never have the energy to feel like myself. I was a zombie. As Pippa ate breakfast, I stared at the wall, clenching my phone in my free hand. I was too weary for email or reading blog posts about lies far better than my own. I did not even have the energy to press the buttons on the remote control and cue up a television show. I set the phone down on the arm of the chair and closed my eyes. I needed to rest and save up my strength so I could change Pippa's diapers without falling asleep on my feet. If only I could sleep on my feet. If only there was a medical reason for the insomnia and anxiety. Then there would be a cure and I might actually get better. Guilt stabbed me in the stomach. I had a healthy, sweet, beautiful baby girl. So many people would kill to have my life. I had to find a way to be content or people would think I was ungrateful and did not look Pippa enough. If only I had postpartum depression. I opened my eyes and looked down at my phone. I had never clicked on the links that had shown up when I first started hunting for the cause of my insomnia. Did I dare hope? I wondered if I hadn't just been imagining those search results. After all, my brain was fried from insomnia. Pippa sighed, and I switched her to the other hand, to the other breast. I gazed down at her. She was perfect. It would not hurt to try. I fired up the browser on my phone and typed postpartum insomnia. A second later, the screen filled with results. Chapter 9, My Breaking Point. The more I read, the more it seemed like I might have postpartum depression. The first thing I learned was that postpartum depression is a spectrum illness. That means there are a bunch of different symptoms, such as feeling irritated, crying, and having scary thoughts, but not every mom experiences the same symptoms. I had assumed that mothers with postpartum depression spend all day in bed, crying and hating their babies. I was quickly disabused of that notion. Crying in bed was a symptom of postpartum depression, but it wasn't a prerequisite to the illness. Moms who love their babies and never cried could still have postpartum depression. I bounced between several different blog posts and identified with many symptoms, such as feeling overwhelmed, guilty, and anxious, and of course, having insomnia. Hope flickered inside me. I was not alone. Maybe it was not just that things were unusually difficult. Maybe there was a diagnosis. Maybe I could get better. But I kept coming back to the fact that I was not depressed. Yes, this was a spectrum illness, and yes, I could tick off a lot of the symptom boxes, but how could I have something called depression if I was not depressed? From what I read, it seemed like not all women with postpartum depression were actually depressed. Postpartum depression was more of an umbrella term that included postpartum anxiety and postpartum obsessive compulsive disorder. It was difficult to sift through all the information because, to be honest, my brain was not firing on all cylinders. Rather than try to figure out the nuances and subtleties of postpartum depression, I just focused on the word depression. It was easier to focus on that part of the illness because it was what I had heard about in passing. I wasn't depressed, which meant I did not have a diagnosis, which meant no one could ever help me. Pippa's crying. I can't make her stop. I had called Nathan at work in the middle of a Tuesday afternoon. I was holding Pippa in my arms while walking laps around the house and cradling my phone between my ear and shoulder. What happened? Is she hurt? Nothing happened. She just won't stop crying. She's been crying for a half hour. Is she gassy? No. Maybe. I tried burping her. She won't stop crying. She's fine, Nathan said. Babies just need to cry sometimes. I wanted to ask him to come home from work. Something felt terribly, horribly wrong, but I could not explain that feeling. So instead of begging Nathan to save me from the undefinable something, I said goodbye and went back to pacing around the house. Pippa kept wailing. I switched directions and patted her back, but her cries only seemed to get louder. I tried a lullaby. She shrieked and shrieked and shrieked. I walked through the kitchen, stepped into the nursery, and that was when it happened. I imagined myself raising my arms into the air and throwing Pippa as hard as I could against the floor. I saw her skull crack open and her brains splatter on the floor. I stopped breathing, pushed the thought away, and clutched Pippa closer to my chest as if some unseen force were trying to wrench her from my arms. Except the unseen force was inside my head. How could I guard against that? I started to shake and sat down on the pink glider my parents had bought us as a gift during the second trimester. I had imagined many serene hours, gently rocking my baby to sleep. Pippa wailed as if she could read my mind and see the horrible thing I had thought. The thought had lasted barely a second. It was more the flash of an image than a proper idea, but I was horrified. I patted Pippa's back. She yelled some more. Each holler seemed to vibrate through my body, making the skin ripple off the muscle. After crying and arching her back for another 10 minutes, Pippa wore herself out and fell asleep. My body stayed rigid for hours. I thought about dirty dishes, pump parts that needed sterilizing, unwritten thank you notes for baby gifts, my wrists, insomnia, the parenting book I was reading, the spot where paint had chipped away beneath the windowsill. Anything but that terrible thought. No one could ever know. I must never think about it again. The next day it happened again. Pippa started crying in the late morning, just as she had the day before. I paced and did everything I could to soothe her, but as she kept screaming for half an hour. Then while walking through the nursery, I saw it. I saw myself raise my arms high above my head. I saw myself slam my arms down. I saw Pippa's skull hit the hardwood floor and her brains splatter everywhere. No, no, no! I did not want to throw my daughter. I pushed the thought away and escaped to the pink chair. I held Pippa closer to keep her safe. But how could she be safe in a monster's arms? Those first two instances were not the only ones. If the dark thoughts had come at random times, like when Pippa and I were happily snuggling, then maybe I could have dismissed them as weird mental hiccups. Unpleasant, but random. The thoughts, though, only came when Pippa was screaming. I assumed they were my subconscious solution to the problem of my daughter's cries. At least a dead baby was a quiet baby. After one of these episodes, I blinked away tears and patted Pippa's back, counting to 100 and then back down to 0. It must be the insomnia. It had to be the insomnia. If I could be strong and ride out the insomnia, the dark thoughts would surely end. What choice did I have? If anyone ever knew about these thoughts, I'd lose Pippa. Oh, look, Pippa, there's Daddy! A week had passed since the first dark thought. We were outside taking our morning constitutional. It was a beautiful July morning. The sky above was blue with a few puffy white clouds. It was early, so the temperature was still in the low 70s. Overhead, a leafy green canopy kept most of the sidewalk in shade. Nathan crossed the street and bent over to coo at Pippa. He was near the end of his morning walk. We are a family that loves to walk, and was heading home to get ready for work. How'd you sleep, babe? 3 hours. Sweetheart. I could handle the insomnia, but now I feel more and more anxious, I told him. It's this physical feeling. I'm always afraid. Nathan frowned. Of what? Nothing. Nathan smiled with relief. Well, if you aren't scared of anything, then you have no reason to be afraid. That made sense. It really did. But you can't reason with a mental illness. I feel like I'm carrying around a backpack of anxiety, and I just want to put it down and walk away. But I don't know how to get it off me. It's like someone welded it onto my back. Nathan stayed silent. He had helped me through my legal career crises, but this was a little beyond his skill set. I felt desperate. I want to figure out how to put down the backpack. I will. I promise I'll figure it out. I know you will. We hugged, and Nathan headed home, putting his headphones back on for the final block. I watched and wondered how I would ever fulfill the promise I had just made. Pippa stirred restlessly, so I started walking again. Should I call the doctor? I could. 5 weeks of insomnia. Surely that deserved medical attention. Plus, there were the dark thoughts, which kept coming every day, whenever Pippa cried. But if I told the doctor about those, the authorities might steal Pippa away from me. Then there was the possibility the doctor would say I was perfectly healthy. Once that happened, my final slim hope would be extinguished. And then what? A few days later, I stood on the porch with Pippa and watched my parents' car reverse out of the driveway. My parents and sister had been visiting for the past hour. So long as they were in the house, I felt safe. But now, I would be alone with Pippa until Nathan got home from work. My heart beat faster and faster. I took Pippa into the house. I could not breathe. I held Pippa close and paced the living room. The air was solidifying and closing in on me, and I could not be alone. I did not have the strength to beat the dark thoughts away anymore. They kept coming every day when Pippa started to wail in the late morning. I would walk around the house and try to stay calm, but then I would think about throwing my daughter as hard as I could. Then I would see her tiny precious skull smashed on the ground, and I would think that at least she would stop crying then. Every time the thought of throwing Pippa came, I pushed it away. But the insomnia was never ending. I was getting more tired. Maybe it was my imagination, but it seemed like the thoughts were getting stronger. I kissed Pippa on the cheek and tried to sit down on the couch, but I could not stay still. I had to keep moving. What if the thoughts came again today? I could not do this. I called Nathan. Please come home. Come home now. I can't be alone. My parents and sister were here and they left. Please come home. I can't be alone. Oh, sweetheart, don't worry. There must have been something scary in my tone of voice. I'm leaving now. Then I called my parents. Please come back. I called Nathan and he's coming home, but I can't be alone. I can't. Please come back. What's wrong? Did something happen? I just can't be alone. I'm so alone. I started to cry. Please come back. We're coming right now. Hang on. I walked outside and stood on the front porch with Pippa, huddled close to the bougainvillea, as if its thorns could keep us safe. I shivered and gasped for air. My hormones had broken the panic button, and although it was a sunny day in a lovely neighborhood, I felt as scared as if our house were surrounded by a pack of wolves and a comet were hurtling toward Pasadena. I had been in situations that actually warranted fear. A major earthquake in the middle of the night, a car accident with a snowplow, the time we thought there was a burglar in the living room. But the physical fear I felt beneath the bougainvillea was 1,000 times stronger than the fear I had felt in those instances. Huge sobs shook my entire body. The emotional release felt good, but I could not stop myself. I'd lost control of my senses. That was extra terrifying. My parents and sister were back in less than 20 minutes. Nathan arrived soon after. They convinced me to come inside. The crying gradually stopped. My mom said, "Why don't you guys come and stay at our house so Courtney can get some good rest?" My parents lived about 40 miles away on the opposite side of Los Angeles County in a suburb close to the beach. I think that's a great idea, Nathan said. I sat on the couch in our living room cradling Pippa while Nathan, my parents, and sister Catherine gathered the things we would need. Occasionally, I suggested packing something, a favorite toy, the diaper rash cream, the cradle, but for the most part, I felt too shattered to help. I had almost reached the bottom of the darkest abyss of my postpartum depression. I was almost ready to ask for help, but not quite. I put the plates in the bottom rack of my parents' dishwasher and started rinsing the cutlery. In the living room, I could hear laughter as Pippa babbled. No one else was in the kitchen. I was alone. The water got too hot, so I adjusted the temperature. As I rinsed suds off the fork, my eyes darted to the left. The knife drawer. It was so close. One step to the left, and I would be front of it. Time slowed down. People were still laughing in the living room. I listened. My dad, my mom, Catherine, and there, that was Nathan. All accounted for, two rooms away. The knives were sharp. In a few minutes, the torture could be over. The insomnia, the anxiety, the panic, the possibility that I might hurt Pippa. All gone and over. I could hear my heartbeat. I could make it stop beating. I shuddered and quickly stepped away from the counter. I pushed the thought of knives out of my mind, but could not stop wondering, where had that thought come from? What was wrong with me? Did I really want to die? There were still dirty dishes in the sink, but I immediately joined my family in the living room. I made sure I was always with someone for the rest of the night. My obstetrician sat down on a stool at my feet. I towered above her from my seat on the examination table. At my request, my mom sat quietly on a chair a few feet away. I wanted her there, partly for moral support, but mostly because I was worried I might forget to tell the doctor something. My dad was in the waiting room with Pippa. So, Courtney, what's going on? I understand you are having trouble sleeping. Yes, I've had insomnia for 5 weeks. I told her about the caffeine, the PMS, and the anxiety. Anxiety, she said. Tell me more about that. I just feel scared all the time. I don't know why, but it's like this physical sensation of fear. It's always there. On the day I summoned everyone home, Nathan suggested I email my friends for moral support. It seemed like a good idea, so I wrote a few people, including my college friend Kendall, about my symptoms and said I thought I might have postpartum depression. Kendall emailed back within the hour and told me to go to the doctor right away. She had coached me through my hypochondria at Dartmouth many times and had firsthand knowledge about my tendency to overreact to headaches and stomach cramps. But this time, she thought my experiences required medical intervention. She even told me to keep seeing doctors until someone helped me. My mom and Nathan had been urging me to call the doctor, but Kendall's email gave me the final nudge I needed to actually get help. I called the doctor's office and spoke to the receptionist. It was Monday afternoon. The first appointment available was Thursday. Thursday. That meant 3 more days of suffering. I asked the receptionist if I could talk to the doctor. Only if it's an emergency. I hesitated. Something told me that I fit the criteria for an emergency, but I also worried the doctor would tell me to go to the emergency room. That seemed excessive. I took the Thursday appointment. For 3 nights, we had slept at my parents' house. I had slept almost 6 hours each of those nights. Not great, since Pippa was sleeping 10 hours each night, but nothing to whine about either. The guilt of inconveniencing my parents and Nathan was like an anvil on my shoulders. So Thursday morning, I announced that I was feeling much better and was ready to move back home to Pasadena. I believe I was experiencing something called denial. I thought I was doing so well, I even told my mom that I wanted to cancel my doctor's appointment. Don't! She looked appalled. But I'm doing so much better. She's probably just going to tell me to take some vitamins. Maybe, but if that's the case, at least we'll have the information. If you cancel, who knows how long it will take to get another appointment. Just go to the doctor, please. So here I was. Judgment day. I wanted to keep talking about my anxiety, because once I stopped, it would be the doctor's turn to speak. Then she would tell me that there was nothing wrong with me and scold me for not getting the extra blood test after the liver ultrasound. I searched for more words to say, but my head felt so muddled it was difficult to string words together. I stammered into silence. Courtney, I held my breath. You have postpartum depression. The anvil on my shoulders disappeared. I had a diagnosis, a medical diagnosis. I still could not believe I had postpartum depression, but all that mattered was that the doctor saw that I needed help. My mom piped up from the corner of the room. Courtney, was there something else you wanted to tell the doctor? She was referring to something that had happened the day before. Pippa had started her late morning crying jag. Neither of us could console her. My anxiety increased until I looked my mom in the eyes and said, I want to die. Now, in the examination room, my mom was reminding me to tell the doctor about that moment. She still had no idea about the dark thoughts. Was there something else I wanted to tell the doctor? I was so tired of keeping secrets. I took a deep breath. I have thought about throwing Pippa so that she would die and stop crying. Saying it out loud, the admission did not sound as terrible as I thought it would. I pushed those thoughts away, but they were very scary, I continued. And I have thought about going to the hospital and being put in a coma. And last night I was alone in the kitchen, and I thought about how close the knives were and how easy it would be to slit my wrists and end all this suffering. My obstetrician scooted her stool closer to me and looked me in the eyes. I'm glad you are telling me this. I think you need to get some help at the hospital. Will you voluntarily admit yourself for psychiatric care? Terror flared in my chest. I turned toward my mom and cried, You promised they would not take Pippa away. And then, as quickly as it had flared up, the terror whooshed away and was replaced by relief. My parents were here. I realized I was inventing an unreasonable fear of some government authority snatching Pippa away to avoid getting help. That was not going to happen. There were too many lawyers in my family. I turned back to my doctor. Yes, I will voluntarily admit myself to the hospital for psychiatric care. And that brings us to the end of chapter 9, and I just wish I could spend the next 7 hours getting through all the rest of the chapters, because I can't wait to just be able to share this so that moms who need to listen to this can listen to this. But my voice is fading and I'm congested with a head cold, so I'm going to stop here. If you can't wait for the next installments, head over to ppdadventures.com and there's a link over there so you can get your free copy of the ebook, or you can go over to Amazon if you want to support me and buy the ebook or buy the paperback. If you finish reading the book and you love it, I would just be so thrilled to pieces if you wrote a review. As of the time I'm recording this in June 2018, I've got one review, which is so exciting. I have one 5-star review, but I'd love to have more. The more reviews I have, the more moms will be able to find my book and be helped by my story. Our stories are so valuable, and I have so many more projects after I share this book with you, but, you know, one thing at a time, baby steps. My goal still is to finish this up by the end of June, so stay tuned, and there'll be another installment, hopefully a couple days after this one drops.